Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about testing Big Sky's wastewater to help track the novel coronavirus, how the state budget is faring, and field work for scientists. It's Thursday, May 14th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. The opening of a summer port of entry between Montana and Canada has been delayed indefinitely, while another port at the border with Canada will remain on winter hours until further notice. Kay Erickson reports.
Customs and Border Protection announced Wednesday the seasonal port of Chief Mountain between Glacier National Park and Waterton Glacier International Peace Park will remain closed until further notice. Normally, the Chief Mountain port opens for the summer on May 15th. Passenger traffic that is determined to be essential may enter the U.S. from Canada through the port at Piegan, Montana, which is east of Chief Mountain. CBP also announced it's keeping winter hours for the cargo permit port of Wild Horse until further notice. Those hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., 7 days a week. Normally, summer hours at Wild Horse begin on May 15th. These delays are in effect until further notice because of current travel restrictions as a result of the novel coronavirus pandemic. I'm Kay Erickson, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana is reporting 462 cases of the COVID-19 illness as of this morning, with one new case coming from Yellowstone County. Yellowstone is tied with Gallatin County for the most active cases at 3. There are currently 16 active cases in the state, 430 people have recovered, and 3 are currently hospitalized. A Montana State University team will start testing Big Sky's wastewater this week to help track whether the novel coronavirus is trending up or down in the resort town. Rachel Kramer reports.
Researchers from the Walk Lab at MSU will collect samples weekly and work with the Gallatin City County Health Department to monitor the virus's particles in wastewater, which are mostly intact but no longer infectious by the time they reach treatment plants. The concentration of the virus's genetic material indicates COVID-19's prevalence in the community. The project is supported by a nearly $80,000 grant from the Big Sky Relief Fund. Health Officer Matt Kelly says wastewater monitoring offers one metric to help make decisions as Gallatin County navigates through the pandemic.
No one indicator here is a panacea.
The number of active COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths will also play a role. Another MSU lab led by Associate Professor Blake Wiedenheft has been analyzing samples from the Bozeman Water Reclamation Facility since March 30th. The team's preliminary results indicate the amount of the virus in the Bozeman population declined during the stay-at-home order. Health Officer Kelly says the county is looking at working with MSU to expand wastewater monitoring in West Yellowstone and other communities in the valley.
We're somewhat constrained by lab capacity, and we're somewhat constrained by how those sites operate and whether they have automatic sampling machines.
Biobot Analytics, a Boston-based company that's analyzing samples from more than 400 wastewater treatment plants for the novel coronavirus in 40 states, has partnered with Lewis and Clark County and the cities of Helena, Great Falls, and Livingston. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A federal judge in Montana heard arguments yesterday in a case where environmental advocacy groups say coal leasing under the Trump administration breaks federal law. Kayla DeRoche reports.
At a remote hearing Wednesday, the Montana Environmental Information Center, the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, and a number of environmental groups and states criticized the U.S. Bureau of Land Management's environmental assessment of its federal coal leasing program. The environmental assessment in question is the result of a court ruling last year that the Trump administration must comply with the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, in its 2017 reversal of an Obama-era coal leasing moratorium. The Obama administration paused the coal program to review its environmental, social, and economic effects and see if it needed updating. At Wednesday's hearing, the Trump administration argued its 2020 environmental review is sufficient and complies with NEPA. The environmental groups disagree. The states of Montana and Wyoming and the National Mining Association have intervened in the case alongside the U.S. Department of Interior and the BLM. Judge Brian Morris of Great Falls oversaw the case and has yet to issue a decision. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana Governor Steve Bullock yesterday said the state's finances are in a, quote, historically strong position, unquote, headed further into the COVID-19 pandemic. But Kevin Trevlin reports that state officials are still working with incomplete information about the pandemic's economic impacts.
The governor's budget office is currently projecting $113 million in state general fund reserves by the end of June next year. Officials say there's also $92 million available through the budget stabilization reserve. State Budget Director Tom Livers says prudent decision-making prior to the pandemic, paired with federal relief dollars, has left Montana with more financial flexibility compared to other states.
Again, the strong position going in, though, gives us considerable cushion as we start to see the impacts of the pandemic.
Livers says next year's reserve projections are based on information collected by the state's market analysis firm and other groups across the country, largely on a nationwide basis. He says information was tailored to Montana conditions specifically, including the state's rapid reopening. Bullock says state agencies are taking steps to offset revenue reductions, including leaving vacant positions unfilled. Montana Speaker of the House Greg Hertz helped draft a yet-to-be-sent letter asking Bullock to consider cuts now to ease budget balancing during the 2021 legislative session. But Bullock rebuffed those calls on a Wednesday press call.
The notion that then what we should do is cuts based on what might happen 6 months from now or a year from now, I think it's probably misplaced for a number of reasons.
State officials expect drops in revenue. Bullock says the state will have more information on the budget picture after the individual income tax filing deadline passes in July.
Montana, like every other state, we just have to see how this all continues to unwind before we can put specific dollar amounts to what might be happening a year or more into the future.
State lawmakers are scheduled to receive a financial report from their staff and the governor's office Friday. Kevin Trevlin, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Parks announced plans yesterday to partially reopen in phases starting on May 18th after a seven-week closure due to COVID-19. Rachel Kramer reports.
Starting Monday at noon, visitors will be allowed to enter Yellowstone National Park through its southern and eastern Wyoming gates. They'll be limited to the lower loop of the park, which includes Old Faithful, Yellowstone Lake, and Hayden Valley. Public restrooms, self-service gas stations, medical clinics, trails, and boardwalks will be open, but overnight lodging, food service, and visitor centers will remain closed. While Wyoming recently lifted a 14-day self-quarantine order for out-of-state visitors and requested Yellowstone reopen, Montana has not. Yellowstone National Park Superintendent Cam Shawley said during a conference call Wednesday that the park's three Montana entrances will remain closed for now. Around 70% of Yellowstone's visitors pass through Gardner, West Yellowstone, and Cook City.
We want to be sure and have good confidence that before we open all five entrances at once, and to my point just now, that's 3 million people that travel into the Montana gateways and through the Montana entrances, that we are prepared to do so.
Shawley said waiting to open Yellowstone's busiest gates will help the park test the waters rather than open the floodgates.
We still have some of the best months in front of us, and let's figure out how to safely and conservatively not put ourselves in a position where we're putting July, August, or September in jeopardy because we're making the wrong decision now.
He said the staggered reopening of Yellowstone's entrances will give staff more time to prepare and modify protocols before the peak season. Employees will wear masks and install protective barriers where appropriate, increase sanitation protocols, and limit the number of people in buildings. Shawley said the Park Service and the concessionaires that operate in Yellowstone will only hire 25% of its normal seasonal workforce this year to reduce the risk of spreading the novel coronavirus. He said he's working with Montana Governor Steve Bullock to determine when would be an appropriate reopening of the entrances. Bullock said in a separate press call Wednesday that wouldn't happen until June 1st at the earliest.
While our economy certainly relies upon and we appreciate our visitors, we also want to ensure that those visitors don't bring problems, meaning their infections, from their home state to our state.
Like Yellowstone, Grand Teton National Park will open some day-use, front country amenities on Monday. The park said Jackson and Jenny Lake Lodges will remain closed for the summer. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Grizzly bear managers around Glacier National Park say they've had a busy spring season with conflicts between bears and humans. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports mortality numbers are on pace with last year, the second highest on record for the ecosystem.
Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Grizzly Management Specialist Mike Madel says this spring has been the busiest in his 36-year-long stint on the Rocky Mountain front. Madel says with a late green-up, plant-based food like cow parsnip, angelica, and various grasses haven't been available to grizzlies venturing down to lower elevations from their dens in the mountains. He adds that as a result of the limited plant food supply, grizzlies have injured or killed more cattle than in years past.
But, you know, we're just talking about a couple each month, you know, a couple in March and a couple in April, and we've already had 18 confirmed grizzly bear rancher conflicts in April alone.
Management specialist Tim Manley says he's seen his fair share of conflicts around the Flathead Valley as well.
It seems to be a little bit busier. Just definitely getting a lot more reports. Things are greening up now, and so there's more options for them in terms of, you know, a lot of the early green up was in people's yards, and that's where the bears were showing up. And of course, then unfortunately, people were leaving garbage and dog food and bird feeders out, and bears were finding those.
Historically, FWP has not tracked grizz conflicts in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem that don't result in mortalities. But the agency is attempting to track those numbers for the first time this year. There have been 10 mortalities within the ecosystem this year. That number includes 3 cubs removed from the area and 7 bears killed by people or euthanized by wildlife managers. Those numbers are on pace with mortalities in 2019, the second highest year on record. That followed 2018, when there were a record-breaking 54 bears killed or removed from the wild. The ecosystem around Glacier averaged about 25 mortalities in prior years. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
This morning, we're continuing our series looking at the impact of the novel coronavirus on scientific research efforts in Montana. Spring and summer field seasons are being postponed, altered, or canceled completely in the face of COVID-19, but the natural world doesn't pause for a pandemic. Kylie Moore reports.
This is what songbirds sounded like a year ago in eastern Montana's sagebrush. But Victoria Dreitz and her 20 field techs aren't there to finish recordings for the final year of their decade of research into the birds. Concerns about spreading the virus to rural communities canceled the season.
Everybody's health comes first before the data collection.
Dreitz is the director of the University of Montana's Avian Science Center. Her research is time sensitive. She and her students need to be in the field when birds migrate and when their eggs hatch.
The animals don't wait just because we needed to figure out our process.
Some field seasons are proceeding roughly as planned, while other far-flung trips were already scratched. UM PhD student Claire Rawlings-Gilder studies how landscapes change in response to forces like water. The state's stay-at-home order quashed plans to place equipment in the middle fork of the Flathead River.
Once the flows start going up during spring snowmelt, it's not safe to be on the river if you're trying to do data collection.
The impact of losing or postponing a summer in the field varies. PhD students might have time to cope with delays, but master's students and undergrads have a shorter window before graduation. University guidelines to keep people safe, although relaxed slightly May 4th, are adding logistical and financial challenges. Crews need plans for social distancing during research trips, plus wearing face masks and taking temperatures every 12 hours. Associate Professor Andrew Whiteley says he's working through these complications to keep his students' upcoming field seasons on track. One study on West Slope cutthroat trout, for example, requires that each generation of offspring be caught.
It just takes a long time for us to understand patterns.
So Whiteley and others are getting innovative, tapping students' roommates or married couples as field helpers to get around social distance hurdles. They say adaptability is just part of doing science. For Montana Public Radio, I'm Kylie Moore.
This story is supported by a grant from the National Geographic COVID-19 Emergency Fund for Journalists. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.